Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Taz Powers.
And I'm Paula Nunes, and we have an incredible guest.
Well, Dr. Bruce Lipton is truly on the cutting edge of his ongoing research. We are so lucky to capture him before he goes into another research mode. Let me tell you, we had a hard time sewing up some time with him today.
And I heard he's moving to New Zealand, so we're really lucky to catch him.
We are. Dr. Bruce Lipton, PhD, best-selling author of The Biology of Belief, is a cellular biologist and former associate professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine. His pioneering research on cloned stem cells at Wisconsin presaged the revolutionary field of epigenetics, the new science of how environment and perception control genes. His later research at Stanford University School of Medicine revealed the nature of the biochemical pathways that bridge the mind-body duality. His book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles, was released in 2005, but it is a real stupendous book.
And we were lucky enough to hear you speak when you were in the Santa Cruz area, so when you were there with Greg Braden. Welcome, Dr. Lipton.
Well, it's actually, as you well know, Taz and Paula, that it's actually Bruce. And it's so exciting to be on your show because the world is going through this momentous event here. Unfortunately, many people are being programmed to be afraid when, in fact, we should be out there absolutely celebrating an evolution that is happening right now to help us survive and actually thrive into the future, considering that we have created the crises that are confronting us, and we are then responsible for uncreating that and creating something better, and it's happening right now. So, me, it's a very exciting time.
Well, we saw up and down in the seminar. We saw how excited you were. You could hardly contain yourself. And you know what? It's just so catching, Bruce. In your book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles, you write about how a scientific epiphany precipitated an instantaneous personal transformation in your life. What did you learn at that pivotal moment in your life?
Well, before I say what I learned, let me tell you why I went into the science, because that was the big surprise.
Okay.
I went into the science because when I was very young, I heard people around me, adults, of course, give me wonderful words of wisdom, spiritual wisdom. And as a young kid, I could, you know, listen to the words, but somehow or other, their life never seemed to match the wisdom that they talked about. So at some point, I thought, you know, that truth didn't seem that true to me. Perhaps science, and why I like science is because the truth on this side of the world is the truth on the other side of the world, and that science pretty much can hold everything together, and people can have a belief system based on that. So I thought, my truths will be scientific and not spiritual in my life. So following that course, I ended up, of course, being a scientist and working on cells and stem cells. This is specifically what I was working on back then, and that was 40 years ago. So it's interesting because a lot of people think that stem cells are something brand new into our world. In fact, my whole career was built on stem cell research, and following the stem cells and what they were teaching me led to this epiphany, and the epiphany was, at some point, if I would just simplify it, we can talk about it, but the simplification was, while I'm teaching medical students the belief that genes control life, it's a fundamental belief of science at the time, and still is to a certain degree, because we still read articles every day that, oh, a gene has been found to do this, and a gene does that, while I was teaching that concept, and doing then this research on the stem cells revealed something totally different. The stem cells revealed that the genes did not control life at all, that the genes would be actually our potentials, and that the organism, be it a cell or a human, selects the genes and adjusts the genes in response to their experiences of life. And this is a profound difference in education in regard. There I am teaching medical students the belief system that we are victims of our genetics because we didn't pick the genes and we can't change the genes and the genes control our lives. So sort of our lives seem to be somewhat out of our control and in the hands of these things called genes, making us more or less victims of our heredity. That cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular disease seem to be running in the family, and then we buy into the belief, oh, genes cause these things, and then I've got these genes. So, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't ask for it, and I came into a family with cancer. So now I'm a victim. So that's what we're teaching. And then the cells that I was growing in tissue culture, the stem cells, totally revealed a different thing. And what it revealed was the simplest experiment, so you don't even have to be a rocket scientist because it's like, wow, that's simple, is I take one single stem cell, put it into a tissue culture dish by itself, and in 10 hours it would divide and form two stem cells. And then 10 hours later there'd be four, another 10 hours, eight. And so every 10 hours a population would be doubling. And so after a few days I've got thousands and thousands of cells in the petri dish, but there's one unique fact. All the cells in the petri dish are genetically identical to the parent cell that went in. So that means I have like thousands of twins, identical twins, all genetically identical cells in the petri dish. And then what I did is split the population up into three groups and then inoculate each of these groups into a different petri dish. So I have three petri dishes with all the cells from the same original culture. So in every dish, all the cells were genetically identical. And yet, what I did is I changed the environment, meaning the growth medium, the tissue culture fluid that I was feeding the cells. They live in that just as much as we live in the world that we're surrounded by. So I changed the environment and created three different environments in the dishes. And in one dish, the cells form bone. Another dish, they form muscle. And in a third dish, they form fat cells. Well, you start off with the question, what controlled the fate of the cells? And then the first thing you eliminate is, well, they were all genetically identical. So I can't say that one cell had genes for something and another cell had different genes. They all were genetically identical when they were put in the dish. The only difference was changing the environment. And so what this led me to see was, my goodness, the genes didn't make the decision as to what they became. The cells responded to the environment and adjusted the genes and controlled the genes. Well, this is profound in this regard. There I am teaching in the classroom, genes control life. And then I come back in my laboratory and the cells were revealing, no, they were all genetically identical. What controlled their lives was the environment. And why this becomes profound at some point was very simply this. I could take my plastic petri dish with cells and put it into a not very supportive environment, an unhealthy environment. And, of course, as you would expect, the cells start to get sick. And then what I found out was if you just take the cells out of that unhealthy environment and move that petri dish over into this other more healthy environment, the cells would recover and start to grow and everything would be wonderful again. And why this is relevant is when we look at ourselves as single people, Paula, you looked in the mirror, there you are, individual, single entity coming back. Taz, there you see an individual. I look in the mirror, there's Bruce, single individual. And now I have to tell you, this is a misperception, because what we see as a single individual actually is a community of 50 trillion cells. It's the cells that are the living entities. When I say me, I'm talking of a community of 50 trillion cells. I'm not talking of a single entity. And so basically, here's a simple truth. All of us are the equivalent of skin-covered petri dishes, because underneath our skin is 50 trillion cells living in the equivalent of a tissue culture. And what's really neat is whether it's the plastic dish of cells or the skin-covered petri dish, if I move them into a non-supportive environment, then either the cells in the dish or the cells in my body respond by getting sick. And while we have always looked at our lives saying, oh, if I am sick, there's something physically wrong with me, the new science says, no, if you are sick, you are just reflecting the environment that you live in. So whether it's the petri dish or the human, you take them out of the bad environment and move them into a good environment, then health returns again. And this is profoundly different than claiming, oh, all our ills and diseases and dysfunctions are due to defects in the biology. And it turns out, no, the biology is just making a complement of the world that you live in. So if you really want to judge, are you living in a good and proper place to support your health and vitality, is look in the mirror. And if you are healthy, then I would say, great, then you're in an environment that supports that. And if you're not healthy, I would have to suggest then you're probably in an environment that is not conducive to maintaining good health, and that a change of environment or a change of your perceptions or beliefs about that environment can bring back health. Now, this doesn't mean that the genes don't have any impact, but let's get real serious for a second and say gene defects that cause illnesses in people account for less than 5% of the population. Matter of fact, probably closer, no more than 3% of the population can legitimately say, my life doesn't work very good and I'm unhealthy because I got here with some bad genes and bad, you know, chemistry. Because it turns out 95 to 97% of us got here with a perfectly wonderful set of genes to enjoy a healthy, happy, loving, prosperous life on this planet. So all the years that conventional biology has been blaming illnesses on the genes has taken away from the reality that, geez, only about 3% of the people can claim that their illnesses are due to the genes. The rest of us, if we're not well or we have a disease or dysfunction, it primarily represents that we're living in an environment that's not supportive, or we perceive the environment, we see it in our mind as not supportive, because it's very interesting. Environment can be very supportive, but if you believe the environment is not supportive, that belief will adjust your biology to create illness. So there I am, back years ago, 1985, beginning to realize everything I'm teaching about how life is working to medical students. I had to realize, oh my God, this is wrong information. But more so, what was the epiphany finally? Thank you for your patience. We finally get around. What the heck was that epiphany? And the epiphany was this. What the cells revealed, when I understood the mechanism by which the cells read or perceive the environment and then convert that into biology, it revealed a very simple fact, that every cell is the equivalent of a programmable chip, that you can adjust the cell to become anything. That's what I did with the tissue culture. In one environment, I programmed the cells, they became muscle. And the same genetically identical cells in another environment, by changing the environment, I programmed them to become bone. So the environment is programming the cells. And what hit me when I fully understood the nature of it was, the environment not just programs the health of the cell, but the environment is also where we get our identity from. That no two people are biologically the same. And I can say that based on very simple observations and experiments. If I take cells out of my body and put it into Taz's body, her system will say, no, this isn't self, and reject them. If Taz puts her cells into Paula's body, then Paula's body says, this isn't self, these cells, and eliminates and rejects those cells. So basically, the first thing we have to acknowledge is no two people are the same, because if you put yourselves in somebody else's body, their body will say not self. And so they know their own self and recognize that somebody else's cells are not self. So basically it says then when a cell is there, it expresses an identity as my cell or your cell. And then I traced back into where in the cell is the personal identity that makes us each different. The biggest surprise was that the differences between two people are related to the fact that on our cells, on almost all of our cells, our cells in our body, those 50 trillion cells, on the surface of those cells is a set of antennas, like miniature television antennas. That's exactly what they're like. And these things are called receptors. Medicine actually studies a group of these receptors and given them this name. So the name is even fun, because they're called self receptors, receivers of self. And what's interesting about it is then the self that makes us each different, my self is different than your self, is due to a set of antennas on the surface of the cell. Well, you might then physically say, oh, the differences between two people are due to these antennas, but then you're missing the point. The antennas are actually antennas, like television antennas. They receive a signal, a broadcast from the environment, and that the identity of who we are is actually a reflection of a broadcast in the environment. What I realized at that moment was that the body is like the equivalent of a television set. And the show that we play isn't programmed in the body. The show is like just like a television show coming over your television set. The television show is a broadcast. And why is that relevant? Because, well, if you look inside the television to find, well, where's the show in here? Where are those little people that I see on the screen? They're not in the television set. That's the playing of the broadcast through the television set. So finally, what does all this mean? Well, in 1985, I sat there and said, oh, my God, my identity, who I am, is the equivalent of a broadcast that's out in the environment, and that my cells are playing this broadcast, and that my body is the equivalent of a television playing the Bruce Show. And what was interesting about it was all of a sudden it hit me. I said, wait a minute. If you're watching a television set and the picture tube breaks, you say, oh, the television's dead. It's not working. And yet then I ask a very interesting question. I say, well, yes, I can see your television's dead. Did the broadcast die at the same time the picture tube went out? And the answer is, of course not. Broadcast's not even in the television set. And basically it says if you got another television, plugged it in and turned it on, and then tuned it to the station, you could see the broadcast was back on. Well, all this represented to me at that instant moment said, oh, my goodness, my identity is not in my body, the television set. My identity is a broadcast. Relevant, if my body dies, that didn't kill the broadcast. The broadcast is still there. And more excitingly, if in the future another biological television, another body is born with the same antennas on it that I have on my cell, it will be receiving me again. And all of a sudden, oh, my God, here's a guy who didn't believe in spirituality, and now the cells have revealed that, of course I'm spiritual. I'm not even part of the cell. I'm part of the broadcast. And it also said that reincarnation, it makes actual physical sense in that that the identity just can be picked up by another television set by downloading it through a set of antennas that are the same as mine. And there's a guy who ran away from spirituality, went deep into the nature of science, and then when I got the deepest into it, a window opened up and it said, and it all works because of this spiritual broadcast. It's like, oh, my God, the farther I ran away from spirit, I ran face first into it through understanding of the cells.
Nature has a plan, then.
Well, nature has a great plan, and that's the beautiful part about extending the biology. Because then if you look at the world that we look in and you think, oh, my God, chaos, everything's turning upside down, the health crises, global warming crises, economic crises, famine crises, all these crises we're looking at, and you think, oh, this is just all these accidents are going to conspire to kill us, and it turns out they're not accidents. This is writing on the wall. This is writing on the wall that says, civilization has been operating by a set of beliefs for a few hundred years now, these scientific beliefs that are mainly Darwinian in nature. And it says, if we continue to follow these beliefs, you can see where it's going. It's going to kill us. And what nature is saying, it's like a symptom. As much as it's very interesting, because when we have symptoms in our body, fever, swelling, aches, pains, or whatever it is, we always think the symptom is the bad guy. And the symptom is, no, the symptom is telling you that something is going wrong. And it's interesting because what have we done, think about it conventionally. When we have symptoms, what do? Well, we go to a doctor and ask them to take away the symptoms. And the reality is, well, the symptoms aren't the problem. The symptoms are like a gauge telling you you've got a problem and you must deal with it. And what do? We say, I don't want to hear about the problem. Don't tell me. Nah, la, 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 la. I'm not listening. And we take a drug, a medication, and we shut off the symptom. And you know what the symptoms really are? The symptoms are the equivalent of gauges on the dashboard of a car. The body is the equivalent of the car, and the symptoms are the gauges. And what do the gauges tell us? Well, they tell us if things are running right or not. If the temperature gauge gets in the red, it says, oh, well, look, the vehicle's going to overheat, so cool off, pull over, calm down, let the engine cool off before you continue going, because if you continue going when the gauge is in the red, you're going to burn out the engine. Well, it's interesting. The symptom, such as anger, is a gauge. And what do? I'm not paying attention to my anger, and it's still there, and I'm getting angrier and angrier. Had it been a gauge with a needle on it that went into a red zone that you could physically see, say, I'm getting too hot here. My anger is heating me up too much. What should I do? Cool off. Pull over. Slow down. Let it come back to operating again. And yet we look at anger as like, oh, it's just an emotion and a symptom. And it's like, it's not just an emotion and symptom. It's a gauge. And when we have a symptom like a fever, you say, fever's annoying. You know, it gets my temperature really up, and I don't feel good, and I feel like I just want to lay in this bed. And if I could get rid of this fever, I'd be back out on the street. Without realizing, the fever, first of all, was not the problem. The fever is the biology's response to a problem. The problem is an infection. The fever is the body's way of dealing with the infection. And yet, when we see a symptom like a fever, we say, well, I don't want a fever. I want it to go away. And it's like, now you're interfering with the ability of the body to respond with the original cause. The fever is not the cause. The fever is a symptom that something else is wrong. If you cover up the fever or stop the fever, you haven't dealt with what the problem was. And, in fact, now you're going to make the problem worse because now you're not going to see it. And so the very interesting point about our lives is that things that happen inside our body that we call emotions and symptoms are gauges telling us that we're not operating our biology right, or there's an interference with our biology, and our body is trying to call our attention to it as much as a flashing light on the dashboard of your car saying you've got a problem. When we take drugs and we do things to cover up the fever, that's the same as taking the flashing light out of the dashboard and throw away, saying, I feel better. That service engine light's not even flashing anymore. I feel so much better. It's like, you're not paying attention to that flashing light. Guess what? Now you could destroy the whole car. Well, the symptoms in our bodies are the same as the symptoms in our world. The things that we see as crises, they're not the problem per se. They're the consequence of a problem. And that trying to eliminate the crisis without understanding the problem that led us to the crisis is the same as taking a drug and saying, I'm not paying attention to the fever or the swelling. That doesn't help us. So what's happening right now outside of our bodies is there are crises facing us as a living system. And what the crises are just telling us is if you continue to live the way you've been living, you are going to die. And that's what the planet has been telling us. And life, we're actually creating a mass extinction of life on this planet through our behavior of destroying the environment, throwing the ecosystem out of balance, is feeding us back with these crises. The crises are not the problem. The problem is we have been living inappropriately and destroying what provides for our life, and that's the environment.
We're little cells in the world.
This is, again, another misperception, because when I said the human body is not a one thing, it's made out of 50 trillion cells, and that each cell is the equivalent of a miniature human living in a giant community. What's interesting is each one of us humans is the equivalent of a cell in something far larger called humanity. What's evolving in front of us right now is not the cell, not the human. The individual human is not evolving. What's evolving or thriving or dying, based on how you're looking at it, is the larger superorganism, the organism called humanity. We are cells in the body of humanity. The crises that we're facing is the crises that is presenting itself to humanity. And so it's sort of like being in the body of a sick person and the cells looking around going, oh, this environment is really bad. Matter of fact, if we don't get well, we're all going to die. Well, then just translocate that belief system to the outer world, recognizing we're cells in a larger body called humanity. The crises are telling us that humanity is being threatened. And why is that important? Because if humanity is threatened, so are the cells that make up humanity, being us. And that the crises are telling us, wake up. We are changing our evolution, because if we continue on the path we're going, I can assure you we're going to die. And so the world's in a process of change. We're moving out of an old belief system that has shaped the civilization that we are living in, and entertaining new ideas and new beliefs to create a new civilization that will thrive. Well, looking at the one we're in is about to die, and this is what's scaring people, you know, in the world right now. They're looking around and saying, "Oh, the structure's changing. Things aren't the same. I'm nervous. I'm afraid. Life as I know it is becoming quite different." And the fact is, yes, and relax into that, because the changes are the change for a new vision, a new civilization. And I'm so excited by the election outcome, because it wasn't just an election in the United States. It was a new vision, a new hope, change, saying you can't continue doing what we're doing. And what was most important about it, it was hope and change for the world, not just change for us in the United States. It was a signal to the world, there's a new change coming, and this is a change that will bring health and harmony back, but you must let go of the old structure, because the old structure is the one that is killing us. What I'd like to suggest to people is, as I said, cells are like miniature people. Think about it this way, that we were cells inside the body of a caterpillar. Instead of body of humanity, we're inside the body of a caterpillar. And the caterpillar is growing, and all the millions and millions of cells in that caterpillar, well, guess what? They're all working. Every cell has a job. Every cell is getting paid. Inside the body of a caterpillar, there's a world, and the cells live in that world, and they're looking at their environment, and they're going, wow, caterpillar's growing. Economy's great. Boom, boom, you know, it's like it's all good. Money's coming in, we're producing, and everybody's working. And then a caterpillar reaches a certain stage of development, and guess what? It begins to slow down. The growth starts slowing down to eventually stop in a lot of ways. Well, put yourself in the body of that caterpillar with all the other millions of cells looking around going, hey, what's going on? the things are closing down. You know they're closing down the digestive system this week. You know, millions of cells are going to be put out of work. The cells start to get nervous. If you were in that population, you'd see the economy seemingly drying up. Growth is slowing down and stopping. That cells are extra. There's no work for them anymore. Many cells in this anxious situation actually commit suicide, which in biology is a process called apoptosis, where cells actually kill themselves. And so that you'd see this populations of millions of cells and everybody getting nervous because the structure, it's not working. The economy is falling apart. The businesses are closing down. Cells are out of work. And of course, if you were one of those cells, you'd be like one of the people in today's world going, oh, it's not working. And then here's the interesting thing. Amongst those cells in that caterpillar, there are cells that are genetically identical to all the other cells, but they have a different vision. They see a different future. These cells, which have the wonderful name, they're called imaginal cells. The imaginal cells look at the destruction going around, and rather than seeing the end of what's going on, they're seeing it as a beginning, a brand new beginning, and to recycle the cells and recycle the materials and turn that from a caterpillar into a butterfly with a much more exciting existence than the caterpillar had. Well, the point about it is this, that I would say anybody listening to this radio show is probably already part of what we would call the imaginal cells of the new civilization. People that are questioning and saying, I say it's all falling apart, but is there a bigger story, a bigger message, or is there a different destination? The answer is yes. We have a better vision. We have a new civilization coming from the ashes of what's being taken down right now for a very simple reason. You can't build a sustainable future on a structure that is leading to our extinction. That simple fact says you better change your belief systems. We better change the way we're living. And this change has just been manifest in the way the population dramatically has voted a new president in, saying, I don't know what he's going to do, but whatever he's going to do is going to be different than what we're doing. He's thinking differently. He's an imaginal cell president. And we don't know what the outcome is going to be, but that's because collectively the imaginal cells are going to group together and take all their new wisdom and new ideas that they're acquiring about the world and take that information and bring it to the population, most of which are scared to death, and to say, don't get nervous about this. This is great if you see what's happening. Something bigger and better is coming. And so I get very excited about it in the midst of the whole thing falling apart. Well, many people around me are, you know, running around with their heads off, screaming like, oh, my God, it's the end of the world. And I'm sitting there with this funny little smile, you know, going, yeah, isn't it great? You know, it's the end of the way it was and the beginning of something new. And all of us, and very important, if you didn't see it this way, your show is part of this evolutionary process. Because what are you saying? You're saying to the public, yes, I know there's an old way of life, and it's been very caustic and gets a lot of people very sick. The health crisis is a reflection that the way we were living is an environment that causes the cells to get sick. To thrive, you have to take the cells out of that environment and put them in the new environment. And your show is part of the broadcast of there's a new way, a new environment, and a new vitality that is manifesting, and we're actually evolving into the next level of evolution. And it's so exciting because with all the wisdom we've acquired over thousands of years in Western civilization, we now have wisdom of the spiritual world. We have wisdom of the material world. And when we bring the material and spiritual together rather than seeing them as separate entities, the evolution before us is nothing less than profound and absolutely amazing, because we will own the reality that the new thinking has already revealed that we are creating this world. And when we own that we are the creators and know how it works, then we can take the destruction that we've unknowingly created because other people told us what to do and create something that is going to provide for thriving. We will create heaven on earth when people recognize that they're not victims, but they're masters. And so I, of course, get very excited.
I know, global. Go ahead.
Okay, the question is, let's go back to your scientific results in the Petri dish.
Yes.
And just how long did it take for the cells to change from a not too workable environment into the positive environment? How soon did you see the cells beginning to change?
Almost instantaneously. As soon as you take them out, the cells respond differently to the new environment and immediately start restructuring their biology and the nature of their cellular bodies and restructure their communities. And it starts virtually the moment you take it out. And it's very interesting because we have data about this in our own world. And what we have data about, for example, is there are individuals that that are been counted out by conventional medicine, sort of like, okay, you've got terminal illness. Listen, you got a few weeks left. Go home and take care of your affairs. And that means, okay, you're done, and we can't do anything anymore. And a large number of these individuals all of a sudden go home. And what did they do? The first thing they say is, well, if I only have a few weeks left, then how the hell with this life I've had before, all the stress and all the pressure. If I only got a few weeks left, I'm going to take all my money and I'm going on that road and I'm going to enjoy everything for the last few weeks of my life, because I'm just not going to be bothered with all the things that have been on my shoulders for all these years. And you know what the surprising thing is? The moment they do that, they start expressing what is called spontaneous remission. And the spontaneous remission is irrelevant because it's like, well, the question, how fast is it take for a spontaneous remission? And the answer is spontaneously. And the cells start the spontaneous remission. When I take them out of the bad environment, put them in the new environment, instantly at that moment, they already are beginning to move toward health. And it's very interesting because if you look at us as cells in a terrible environment, we've always had the tendency to say, oh, well, fix the body because that will get us, bring us back to health. And it turns out, no, all the chemistry and all the drugs you're throwing in the body are just a way of trying to bring back health in a world that doesn't provide health. And so basically it says, rather than taking all the drugs and all the chemistry, the whole primary thing is take yourself out of that environment, out of that belief system. Start seeing life in a different way. And the cells in the Petri dish or the cells under your skin-covered Petri dish, all of them, as soon as that environmental perception has changed, will immediately begin to manifest new health and new life.
Now, how were the cells programmed to be bone or muscle? Because you said they came out differently. How were they programmed?
Well, because the cells are like us moving through the world. Well, we don't live in liquid. So imagine, so like fish living in the world, because they live in liquid, okay? The environment that's in the sea is really influencing the health and vitality of the organisms that live in the sea. I mean, what we're looking at right now, unfortunately, scientists have revealed that we've been so destructive of the ocean environment that they have now predicted that within 40 years, and that's, God, not a very long time, that if we don't change right now, within 40 years, the oceans will be fished out. And, boy, that's almost like a science fiction nightmare, and yet is becoming real. Why? Because we've toxified the environment. So it says, oh, then in the fluid that the fish live, toxins in the environment act as information that alter the fate and health of the fish. We live in an air environment, but we've also polluted that environment as well. Meaning this, the information in the environment, be it toxins or positive signals, be it a water environment or an air environment, this information is perceived by the living organisms, and then the biology of the organism is adjusted to deal with this information. When I change the culture medium, I put into the environment different kinds of signals, like chemistry. That's what it is, change some of the chemistry. And when the cells got into that environment, the new signals said, oh, well, in this environment, if I'm reading this correctly, then I should become a muscle. In the other petri dish, slightly different environment, those cells were looking at the environment and go, well, if I interpret this correctly, then I should become bone. And they adjust their biology. And we go out into our world, and if we perceive the world, we adjust our biology to what we perceive. And unfortunately, as the statistics reveal, the worse the environment, the worse the health. And so basically it says, yes, as biological organisms, we read these toxic signals. Rather than bringing health into our system, the toxic signals really divert our health and ultimately cause disease and dysfunction. So basically, whether you're a single cell in the petri dish or a human in your community, you respond to the environmental signals in the exact same way, in a sense that you interpret the signals and then adjust your biology to match the demands or needs of that particular environment. So, again, the beautiful part is whether you're a cell or a human, you're both living organisms that are responding to the environment. And our beliefs and perceptions are the interface between what's really going on in the environment and ourselves. So between the outside world and the inside world is the brain and the mind. And the brain and mind reads the outside world, interprets what's going on, and then sends chemistry and nerve signals to the cells inside to tell them, oh, listen, this is what's going on in the outside world, so now I want you to change your expression or your activities and do this and this and this. So the cells inside are sort of like watching CNN, and that our eyes are like the television camera. So the cells are seeing what's going on outside and trying to adjust their jobs and what they do inside to match what they see outside. And why that's important is if you change your perceptions or your beliefs, then by definition you've changed the signals you've sent to the cells. And the beliefs and perceptions that we operate from right now are destructive. And that's why the crises that we see in our world are manifesting, is because if you behave this way and alter the environment, then you're going to create an environment that will toxify you. And by changing your perception in response to the environment, you can create a healthy environment, one that you can thrive in. And this is what we're being called upon, because after 100 years of telling people they're victims of their genes, all of a sudden we're getting, wait a minute, genes don't control this. Genes are responsive elements. They respond to what's going on. They don't make decisions. So when a gene is making a response, it's really because the brain has sent a signal to it. And so all of a sudden, the vision goes from old vision, you're a victim and genes control your fate. New vision, you're a master because you can adjust your genetics. And therefore, you're not a victim of the genes. You can rewrite the genes. And that's the fabulous insight, because it says when we become aware of this and operate from it as a program belief, which we don't have right now because we're still programmed with, oh, you're a victim of genes. You got cancer genes. You're going to get cancer. You got diabetes genes. You're going to get diabetes. The new science says you can change the readout of the genes. Here's an astonishing fact. This is like a number that's astonishing. A gene is a blueprint to make a protein part that makes your body's machine. And what's interesting is through the way we perceive and respond to the environment, we can modify each blueprint to create, here's the number, 30,000 different variations from each blueprint, each gene in our body. And why is that relevant? It says, here we were telling everybody genes are concrete. They tell you what you are. And now we find out genes are plastic. You can change them to make 30,000 different variations. Some of the variations make a better action. Some of the variations make a worse action. So all of a sudden it says the genes didn't control. The genes adjusted and adapted to our perceptions and beliefs. And therefore our lives are reflections of our beliefs.
Now, I have a question about stem cells.
Yes.
If you bring a stem cell into the body, which is
why would you bring it in?
Well, maybe I'm not clear.
No, I mean, it's a good question. It's actually a profound question, so it's just to start thinking in a different way. Because
okay.
We're saying, oh, well, listen, we're going to go get these stem cells and put them in tissue culture, teach them how to work, and then they're going to work for us. My question is, you're bringing stem cells into the body as almost suggesting you didn't have stem cells in the body. And here's a fact. Every one of us, is, at least if you're alive out there, every one of us has got stem cells throughout our body everywhere. And they work every day because every day, by natural attrition, we're losing billions of our cells to age or damage or trauma, and they're being replaced every day. And the question is, well, who's replacing them? And the answer is stem cells. So all of a sudden, the first thing I would tell you, if you're alive, then I know you have stem cells because, for example, every 3 days, the entire lining of the digestive tract, you know, I mean, I had 20 feet or something of digestive tract, the entire lining, all the cells are replaced every 3 days. It's like, wow, where'd you get those cells from every 3 days? The answer is stem cells. If you are alive and, as I said, listening to this broadcast, and you have stem cells, and they're working. And now the question is, well, then how come they work in this person and they took care of them in my body? I seem to not have, you know, they're not working, so I want to go to the pharmaceutical company. Maybe I can get some drugs and chemistry to get my stem cells working. And then I go back and say, the cells respond to the perception of the mind.
The thinker.
What's that?
The thinker.
Yeah. Why is that relevant? Because if you believe you can't heal yourself, that's a perception. Then what are you telling the cells in your body? I can't heal myself. So the stem cells are sitting there going, oh, okay, we're not working today because we've just been told we don't do this today. Okay? So the stem cells in your body will not actually repair something because your belief system is, oh, I have a permanent defect and I can't fix that. And yet the same stem cells could fix it if you had a belief that says, listen, replace and repair this damage. But our programming, the kind of programming we get from children on up is, you don't take care of your own health. Who do you think you are? The professional takes care of your health. So you defer your health to the professional. Then the professional comes and says, oh, you can't fix that. And then what does that mean in the mind's perception? The mind says, oh, belief system, I do not fix that. Why is it relevant? Because if my stem cells fixed it, it would challenge my belief system. So since the belief system controls the fate of the cells, if you tell the cells they can't fix it, then the cells will not fix it, even though you have stem cells in your body right now.
Well, on the news, there was a lady that had...
Got a trachea.
With
her own stem cells.
Oh, she used her own.
Yes.
So they're doing that more and more now, because I'm thinking about foreign stem cells. Wouldn't our receptors say they're foreign, don't we?
Absolutely, and that's one of the very interesting things, because a lot of healing that's attributed to the foreign stem cells, probably not to the foreign stem cells, but probably by activating your own stem cells, because now you've taken a belief. What? What's the perception of the recipient of stem cells? The perception of that individual is, oh, I just put the cells in that are going to repair my body. Mm-hmm. So they're saying to the body, it can repair. Go ahead, repair. Most likely what you've done is just acknowledge your own stem cells. Go ahead and fix now, because up to this point, we didn't have the ability to repair ourselves, but now we do, and so healing comes about. I believe probably most of the stem cells are probably lost, the foreign stem cells are lost over time as the immune system will have a tendency to eliminate them.
So that's the reason why they're using your own stem cells.
Your own stem cells, because mm-hmm. when it's put back in your own body, it says, oh, this is me. Oh, this is acceptable.
But you can reprogram those to be negative also.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the whole idea is, since the programming isn't in the cell, but in the environment around the cell, then what that environment is in regard to it, the physical environment, like the chemistry, or, and more importantly, the non-physical environment, like the mind and the perceptions and the beliefs and attitudes and the emotions, those have as much influence as the chemistry on the stem cells. If you have a distorted environment, then you will distort the response of the stem cells.
Now, I often, people that smoke, it's, you know, it's a bad environment, but the mindset is every time somebody puts a cigarette in their mouth, somebody on the outside says, that's going to kill you, you're going to get cancer. That even makes it go faster, I would
say.
Oh,
absolutely. When you write on the pack that if you smoke this, you're going to get cancer, what do you think the subconscious says? Oh, well, look, we're smoking this, and oh, my God, we're going to get cancer. So it's just a way of life for them. They smoke, and then they end up with cancer because of a belief system. And then you'd have to say, does smoking absolutely kill you? And then you have to go and say, well, look at these people, 100-some years old, smoking 2 or 3 packs of cigarettes for the last 50 years, and they're okay. Explain that. Or, more importantly, here's a gene that causes cancer, and yet only 50% of the people that have the gene get the cancer. Then you have to say, okay, how did those exceptions get by? Well, those are the instructions. Those are the instructive exceptions, because we focus, oh, this gene causes cancer, and 50% of you are going to get the cancer, and let's focus on the 50% that are going to get the cancer. To me, as a research scientist, it's like, well, that's very interesting. I think more important question is, what about the 50% that have the gene and didn't get the cancer? What is different? And it's basically their attitudes and their beliefs and the way they respond to life and the absence of stress. That's what prevented the cancer from forming in their body, while the person that had the gene and got the cancer was influenced because of their perceptions and their stresses and whatever dysfunctions are going on in their environment. And so, again, we said the gene caused the cancer. I said, no, the gene doesn't cause cancer, because if the gene caused cancer, everybody with the gene would have the cancer. But if you get whatever percentages of people, from 10 to 50 or 60% of the people with so-called cancer genes don't get the cancer, then you actually have to back off on that gene causes cancer, because obviously it doesn't. Because if it did, everybody would have gotten the cancer. So the question
now,
is,
I'm sorry. Now, do they have technology to help people retrain thinking?
Well, yes, this is what's really the exciting part, because if I just said to you, okay, your thinking is causing your illnesses, good luck, that would be a short seminar and not a very happy ending.
You're
but
on
the reality,
your own.
there are many different ways to approach this issue. So there's psychoanalysis, which is not very effective, because it doesn't engage the subconscious mind. That's where the problems come from. So I say, well, what are the best ways of engaging the subconscious mind to rewrite the programs? And the answer is, well, hypnotherapy has always been there, because that's how we got the original programs. We were in a state of hypnosis for the first five years of our lives, where we downloaded our responses and behaviors to life by observing other people and see how they did it, like our parents. So we see how they handle stress, and we do the same as they did. And that's a program that goes in the subconscious mind, and that will run your life until you change that program. And so I say, well, hypnotherapy is the way of changing it, because you got the program when, as a child before 5, when your brain was in a state of hypnosis for the first 5 years, in which where we learn how to behave and perceive our world and respond to our world by observing others. There's a whole group of interesting modalities collectively called energy psychology. And these modalities are not conventional psychoanalysis, but they're modalities that allow a rewriting of the programs using a process equivalent to super learning, so that you can actually rewrite these programs in a very short time, not weeks and years, but in minutes. So that's profoundly important. One of the first things I did to change my programming when I started to recognize that was the cause of my problems was start to pay attention to the voices in your head, that, you know, like you stop at the stoplight in your car, it's not dead silent in your head. You're reviewing things like, well, like what you might be doing that day, and you're probably saying things like, oh, that won't happen, or I won't get there on time, or this isn't going to work out. Because psychiatrists, psychologists tell us 70% of that self-talk in our mind, which comes from our subconscious, is negative and redundant. And since the subconscious is the primary control of our biology, if you got 70% of the talk coming from that subconscious not supporting you, that means that 70% of the information from that subconscious mind is going to undermine your health and your life and all the characters that you experience while being on this planet. So Buddhist mindfulness is a way of saying, wait, instead of letting the subconscious programs run the show, what if I stay conscious of being here right now? Because then if I do, then I can, if a belief that comes up that says this isn't going to happen enters into my conscious mind, I say, I heard that, and I don't believe that. I know I can make it happen. And that's when people start to take control of their lives. So mindfulness is a way of doing it as well. So there are a variety of ways, but until you go into that subconscious mind and start to work on the programs, then you are a slave of the subconscious mind. And in fact, this is what neuroscience has revealed, that 95% of our behavior is controlled by the subconscious mind, not the conscious mind. And that, why is that relevant? Because if I said, Taz, tell me what you want out of your life, and you give me a list of, oh, I want the health, and I'd like to have money, and whatever these things are, and I'm going to tell you right now, those wishes and your desires and what you want from life, they come from the conscious mind. And now neuroscientists reveal that conscious mind only runs the show 5% of the day. And all of a sudden you realize, you mean only 5% of my daytime am I moving in the direction I want to go in? What about the other 95%? And scientists tell us, oh, those programs come from the subconscious mind. Well, the problem is the fundamental programs in the subconscious mind, those behaviors that we engage in, the fundamental programs were downloaded from observing other people. So the fundamental programs that we operate from 95% of the day are not our beliefs and our attitudes and what we want. The fundamental programs were downloaded from other people. So we're engaging in other people's beliefs 95% of the day. And unfortunately, as science again reveals, most of the beliefs we've been programmed with as children are actually disempowering, limiting, or self-sabotaging beliefs. Well, then that means only 5% of the day are you operating your mind and cognition to get you to where you want to go. 95% of the day you're playing other people's programs, which almost inevitably don't take you to where you want to go, and almost inevitably are limiting or disempowering. So it says, well, there's the problem. The problem isn't that the world's against us. It's our own subconscious programs that are undermining us and cutting our feet off. And it's really interesting, because then people say, well, if I was self-sabotaging myself, I'd be totally aware of that, and I wouldn't do that, so I'm not doing this. And here's the joke, and I give this in a lecture. Well, as you well heard, I say a little story. I say, you know somebody, and you know your friend's parent, and you realize that your friend and their parent have the same behavior. So one day you just, you know, casually acknowledge, you know, Bill, you're just like your dad. And then you back away from Bill, because at this point he's going to be like, almost like, what are you talking? I'm not like my dad. And go through a whole defense that he's not like his dad. And here's the joke. Everyone else can see that Bill's behaving like his dad. It's Bill who doesn't see it. And the reason is the subconscious is called also the unconscious mind. When we play those tapes, they play unconsciously. We don't even see them. They just play. 95% of the day, we're playing behaviors that we got from other people, and we don't see them. And that's where the conflicts in our lives come from, because we have wishes and desires in our conscious mind working 5% of the day. We have trouble obtaining those wishes and desires, and therefore we think to ourselves, well, I wanted success and health and wealth and all this, and I didn't get it. So the universe is against me, and I am a victim because I wanted these positive things, and look what I ended up with. And now we find out the universe didn't do that. It was our unconscious beliefs that did that, the ones that we didn't see. And so all of a sudden it says if you become aware of this, if you understand the nature of this, then you say, oh, my God, I've been blind to the fact that I was actually responsible for not getting there, but I didn't know it. But when we become aware of it and become responsible, then we can say, you know, those beliefs I've had since the beginning of my life and I didn't see them, I can rewrite them. I can change them. I can create better beliefs. And when you do that process, you've taken control of your life. And the moment you take responsibility and take control of your life, then what we create on this world is what we wanted to create rather than what other people programmed us to create. And that's when we become masters, and that's when we create heaven on this planet. And that's the future, because the new science that's coming out is going to inform people that you're not a victim of forces outside of you. If anything, you're a victim of the beliefs that you can't see that are playing in your subconscious mind that you got from other people.
So we need to find that specific string to pull to unravel the
unconscious. Yes, but it can be done. And that's the positive side. There's a spin here. It's positive. It says, we can do this. We now know why it happened, and now we know we can change it. So for the first time in our civilization, the science and awareness is coming out to say, you're not just a passive victim, and the world happens to you. The new science says we're co-creating. And with that, we
now,
can create better.
Did you start working with mindfulness after your research with the cells?
Yes, I didn't know any other way, but my research revealed that my subconscious mind was controlling it, and I wasn't sure what was in that subconscious mind. So as an experiment, because I was using myself as the experiment, was to pay attention for the first time in my life and say, don't let those thoughts just fly through your head and let them out again, because what you're doing is creating a life that matches the thoughts. And it was the intervention that had to do it. You know why I did it, too? It was really fun, because at one level, academically, I knew that we were creating these lives, and I understood the mechanism. So if I could have gotten anybody to listen long enough, which I tried to do, is pull people in and say, I got to tell you about this, because this is fabulous. If you understand what I'm talking about, you can create this most wonderful life on this planet. And it was funny, because in my first audiences, they'd look at me and they'd go, you know, Lipton, for a guy who says you know this stuff, your life doesn't look that good. And then I got caught, and I realized I was telling people what to do, and I wasn't doing it myself. And it was like, oh, bad, ooh, that doesn't work. And that's what led me to, because I didn't know any other way, was saying, then I cannot go on and lecture if I'm not going to try it. And the first way, because I didn't know about energy psychology at the time, was to be mindful. And yet, when I became mindful, it changed my life profoundly at that moment. And I realized, oh, my God, I'm putting into play what I said, and it works. And that was like the greatest motivation in the world. Says, let's go and clean up all the bad programs and rewrite your life. And I've done so, to the extent, anyway, that if you ever asked me about my life, as I wrote about in the book, it was like, boy, was that hell on wheels then. And since that time, having gotten in touch with my programming as much as I have to this point, because you never get finished, I programmed it to the extent that I honestly could say, and I look out my window right now and can tell you, I live in heaven. And you might say, well, turn on the news. And I say, makes no difference. I still live in heaven because I've created a world that I respond to different than the one that the news is telling me about.
Bruce, about 40 minutes gone here, and I just want to let people know that you have a new audio book out. It's called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, and a Way to Get There from Here. And they can go to your website.
Amazon, get that, yeah.
Okay.
I'm excited by it because basically it said the biology of belief is a book about how our personal beliefs control our personal lives. But it's the same science for cultural beliefs, except the difference is a cultural belief uniformly affects all the people in the culture at the same time. So while our personal beliefs affect us individually, cultural beliefs are beliefs by which an entire culture will adapt the same behavior, making it seem like, oh, my God, this is so truthful because everybody's doing the same thing. It's like, no, That's just a belief that everybody bought. And if we change culturally...
We have so much fun time with you. We have
Are we running out?
Yes, let's get back.
It was just like Dale. He said the same thing that I'm going to say. We're running out.
Well, let's give out Bruce's website for everyone.
Simple. BruceLipton.com.
Oh, very simple.
And it was wonderful for those people to say, well, this guy sounds kind of weird, and is there any real basis for it? Let me just suggest that at the website, a lot of free articles, download them. There are articles about everything we're talking about, and they provide a scientific basis for as deep as you want to go into it.
Well, we've really enjoyed this hour with you.
I enjoyed this last 5 minutes with you because that's all it seemed like to me.
Okay.
So, time was fast. So I must be having fun because when it's a good time, it disappears fast.
Thanks to you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
Have
you
a
both.
Wonderful day.
Bye.
Thank you both for this opportunity. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Taz and Paula Show, Embracing Mother Earth. And now we're going to start our new program, and it's called Grooves. Let's see, it's New Grooves, and I'll put on some new music. It's 91.5 KKUP.